Good morning. Today is Tuesday, March the 26th. Joining us this morning is Eureka City School Super Duper, Gary Storitz. Good morning, guy.
Hey, how we doing?
I don't know.
I'll tell you how I'm doing after this question.
All right, perfect. That's called timing and forethought and all that kind of wonderful things that I don't seem to have the ability to do. How accurate is the Groundhog Day forecast?
Very inaccurate. I'm going to say a third of the time.
Incomplete?
You know.
Sorry, I flashed back to elementary school.
Not accurate. Let's say a third of the time.
In German folklore, if it's sunny when he emerges from hibernation, a groundhog will be frightened by his own shadow and return to his lair. Therefore, crops shouldn't be planted because there will be another 6 weeks of winter. In fact, the groundhog comes out hungry and ready to mate. Shock and awe. And if he's still dozy and his senses are dulled, he goes back to sleep. As a forecaster, the groundhog is accurate only 28% of the time. And then there's a cheap comment about the weatherman.
That's as close as I've ever gotten to getting a question. I'll take it.
You were not that close, dude. You're still going to take it and run, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Put that one on the resume. All right. Fine. Well, I've been asking a lot of the folks coming through about the state budget.
Yeah.
As it's whether it's accurate or not, or whether it's the final or not, it's the first salvo in the battle. Impressions?
Yeah. Every article that I see come out right now, you know, paints a little bit more bleak of a picture right now. So, I mean, we're still up in the air, whether it's, you know, a $38 billion deficit or a $78 billion deficit, somewhere in the middle, likely.
Yeah.
But not...
You really do these extreme boundaries and play it in the center and say it's a win, huh? Giants are going to have somewhere between 15 wins and 125. I win.
I'm hoping for the over there.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But yeah, big margins from the budgetary projections that we're hearing right now. And then I think you couple kind of the state economic downturn with some of the things that we're dealing with at Eureka City Schools, where we've got a few less kids than we had the previous year.
Is that demographic, Gary, or is that people relocating?
Great question. Hospital birth rates, from what I understand, are a little down, from 5 years ago. There's probably a variety of factors that are mixed in there. But you couple less kids coming through the doors with less kids, in class on a regular basis, which is a mechanism for our funding. And you couple that with the state budget downturn, and we're actually looking at dealing with less dollars next year than we are dealing with this year. So that's the first time
raw dollars, not adjusted dollars.
Correct. Then we have in the first time for a little while. So we're taking the necessary steps to have those conversations and really prioritize what our main things are right now, because we can't do it all.
I would think that there's a healthy aspect to doing that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But when things are robust, you don't gotta. Everybody's happy, everybody's smiling, you can be fat and dumb, sassy, and who cares? Going the other direction, you can't afford those things, and all of a sudden, some exercises come into play that weren't there before.
Agreed. I think it's a really healthy opportunity for us to kind of take a step back and to say, okay, what are the most important things for us to focus on right now? We've identified early literacy. There's a mountain of research, that suggests that we've got to get kids reading to grade level by the end of the third grade, committed to that effort. And then on the opposite end
Is it a grade level or is it just reading? Because I would think if you get a kid fired up about reading, they're gonna get where they need to go. But if it's something else, being laid on them or seen as drudgery.
Right. Developmentally, you've got about until the third grade or so to teach a kid how to read. And then after the third grade, you're really hoping that kids can kind of, you know, read to learn. And then they can really start exploring their interests and stuff. So that's one of the really big mind shifts that we're having to kind of grapple with and deal with. And
you know, what wasn't early literacy a big push in the 80s?
It was, you know, not to date myself too much,
but kind of like the first time it really surfaced is this is something we need to do. Parents, you need to read with your kids and all that kind of discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. I think early literacy has always been sort of a priority for schools and school districts and for the country, really. But we know a lot more about literacy than we ever have.
Was it Nancy Reagan or was it Barbara Bush? It was Barbara Bush.
It was Barbara Bush.
She did the story times.
Correct.
I remember CBS had that series on, and you could run. It was like a half hour, and Mrs. Bush would be there.
Absolutely.
Okay, click. Boy, that one took a while.
But what we know now is we know how to best teach kids how to read. You know, it's more than just...
Is it style points? Or just get fired up, read comic books. It doesn't matter what you read. Get used to putting something in your fingers that have letters on them, that you know what they are. Go forth and conquer.
That is part of it. You have to get kids, you know, to have a book. But we also know now that we've got to teach kids in a particular sequence. Some kids are just going to understand how to read. Their mom and dad's going to read to them, grandma and grandpa's going to read to them, and they're going to pick it up and they're going to get it. But for the other two-thirds of the population, there's a sequence that that will best prepare our kids to be able to read at grade level by the end of the third grade, which is a really big mile marker when it comes to future success. There's enough data on this now that this is something that everybody is paying attention to.
Two-thirds?
Two-thirds.
Wow.
Two-thirds, yeah. Two-thirds need a little bit more than just sitting down, sitting on, you know, mom and dad's lap and having a story read to them.
Or, you know, in the circle in the classroom, mm-hmm. you know, on the carpet. Well, I guess that was probably kindergarten, huh? That's a weird image. Okay. We'll be moving on here very quickly. KINS, News and Information Times, 8:09.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about chicken of the sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Gary Storrs from the City of Eureka Schools. No.
It was close.
Eureka City Schools.
There we go.
Oh,
yeah.
The. I see.
Like Ohio State.
Yeah, that's where I was going. You're not a Buckeye, are you?
No.
Oh.
No, I'm a lumberjack.
No, I apologies. Condolences. Yeah, isn't that? It's kind of cool though how they do that. I've got buds in Ohio that carry and are alumni of, and all you have to do,
yep,
bam, there it is. I mean, that whole culture around education being a positive and reinforcing the positives. I don't know how much that happens on the West Coast. I don't know if we're too erudite. Or, you know, it's beneath us, quote unquote. Wait, you think of all the major schools, right? Maybe UCLA back when John Wooden was coach. But you think of Cal or Stanford or San Jose State or Santa Clara or W or Washington State or Oregon and Oregon. It's not, well, I guess Oregon probably has a fervor about it to a certain extent. because of the football program.
Yeah.
But you think about it, and it's like, that's something that's so Midwest. But how cool would that be if you could embrace that feeling of pride with an elementary school or a junior high? High school, then things kind of get a little weird, like fights and things like that. And that's not the direction to go. But I wonder when the last tailgate party was at a junior high in Humboldt County.
Yeah, not it's been a minute, I would think. You know?
Yeah, whether it's part of a carnival or back to school night or let's just kind of do something first day of spring. You know, I mean, that kind of bring everybody together and break down those walls, which I think is kind of what you're addressing with some of these bragging moments is kind of what we ended up with during the break.
Yeah.
For the kids, where they can just kind of go, yeah, I did something. Yeah.
Yeah, so we are looking to take our portrait of a graduate, these list of skills, these competencies that the community helped create, from, you know, being a strong communicator to being a resilient learner to, you know, being locally minded but global focused, and some of these
platitudes, buddy.
some of these traits and characteristics, and then, you know, looking to intentionally design some learning opportunities that showcase those. And we want to do that in a way that provides students with a little bit of voice and choice over what it is that they're wanting to tackle in
like
their
assignment. A fifth grader, I mean, I would think those options would be kind of narrowly defined.
For sure. I mean, I think that you want to have the objective of the lesson or the standard that the teacher is trying to make, but you want to be able to provide students with a couple of different choices, you know, so that there's a little bit of buy-in, a little bit stronger engagement, you know, in the particular project or assignment, and then, you know,
kind of like general ed
and then
classes at college,
and then a
couple choices. You may not want any of them, but you know, you got a couple of choices.
but providing kids with a little bit of choice so that they feel a little bit more ownership over their learning. We're in an environment now where, you know, worksheets just don't get it done. You know, you can't just keep chucking a worksheet at a kid and, you know, expecting them to, you know, be stoked,
excited to
do it, right? You know?
Yeah, the feeling of accomplishment can be defined in many ways.
It can.
Answering questions on it, you know, for the fifth one this week.
right.
Is the opportunity for teaching different styles embraced? Your list of questions.
Yeah.
Okay, if we had discussion on four bullet points, you guys choose which four, let's talk about it so that maybe there's a better understanding of what this thing is rather than everybody doing a three-sentence response. We take 15 minutes or 20 minutes, you know, whatever it might take, and we discuss and talk about, and you guys ask questions, and maybe we all do research together as a team rather than the teacher being the all-knowing Karnak.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that what you're hitting at is one of the things that we're trying to explore right now is, you know, what the student needs to learn is defined, you know, in the lesson. But how they're going to learn it, you know, is something that we can provide some voice and choice with. But the real key, the hook for kids is that relevance piece, the why are students needing to learn this? Why are they wanting to learn it? Like that's the piece that we have noticed throughout the course of the year when we go in and we ask students a couple of questions. We ask, you know, what are you learning? Why are you learning it? And how do you know that you've learned it? And
because they got an A.
Right. You know, and those are some of the answers that we typically get. So then we have conversations with teachers, you know, and the principals lead these conversations about, well, how do we get students to understand the material at a little bit deeper level? And it's beginning to happen.
Or not.
You know?
Yeah, I would think that a victory could be defined as that they don't know, but they know that they don't know. You know, how much did you not know about being superintendent when you thought you knew it all day one going in? Yeah. Right. All you do, you know, what am I, 46 years doing something out here? All I know is how little I know. And that's it. You know, the closer keeps you humble. Get, the broader it gets, and the moving targets and all this. So I would think that getting the kids comfortable with even thinking that way
right.
would be cool. And the teachers.
Absolutely. Humble, curious, and kind. Good qualities to have.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Gary Storts from Eureka City Schools. The concept of a board member and the superintendent sitting down with a principal.
Yeah.
Boy, one of those three is going to be intimidated beyond belief, right? What if it was a parent? Random parent or grandparent. I mean, it doesn't have to be somebody whose kids are there. And probably would be better if not, rather than a board member. And let's engage the community and let them kind of peek in and find out and ask questions. And because I would think a board member has a potential to intimidate you. Certainly will the principal or principal teacher. You intimidate, or your position. Not you
specifically. Sure, sure.
Intimidate principal teacher.
Yeah.
Okay. And the kids might just kind of be, in, I don't know why, but shock and awe. Normalize the process, kind of like what we were talking about with the projects, and let's normalize the classroom setting so that learning is a passion rather than something that's either foisted upon them or they don't see any connection.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting idea and something that we're going to explore. We started going around and having conversations with students and the principals invited, and the reason that we did that, and we've got the same, you know, 10 questions that we're asking students, you know, from 8 years old to 18 years old. And, you know, we're asking them questions like, you know, what's your favorite thing about school? You know, what do you want to learn more about? If you had a magic wand, what's something that we should stop doing at school?
You do the pixie dust also, huh?
You know?
Yeah. We can address one thing. What would it be?
You know? And, yeah. You know, and it's
are there consistencies, Gary, with the responses?
There are. Like, there absolutely are. And it's kind of two sides of the same coin. And one vein, we get students when we ask them, you know, what are your most memorable projects? What are the most memorable assignments you have at school? It's almost always something that involves a project or a field trip or something where they've able to take the learning that they've done inside of the classroom and apply it somehow. So
it's not the exploding volcano in the kitchen?
It's not, you know. It is, but it might be to piggyback on the kitchen comment, it might be cooking something in culinary class and then serving it to a community group, you know, and then getting some feedback on it, you know, but it's somehow applying it. And then when you ask students, you know, what's something that you would change about school, you know, it's almost always sitting in the seat, you know, being what is considered, you know, an old school good student, you know.
The routine, getting, the boredom, the predictability.
Right. You know, like, yeah. It's
like pulling green chain.
Absolutely.
Boy, isn't that an old analogy? I wonder, if they still pull green chain? It's probably all automated in most mills.
Yeah.
But the sheer boredom of repetition, over and over the same thing.
That factory line, you know, kind of assembly approach is something that, you know, that kids aren't digging anymore. And you
I don't know if we ever did.
You know, yeah, I don't know if I did.
You know, I don't know if there was just, you know, the greater cause and you sucked it up. Or if that's where a lot of kids started to fall away to the wayside.
Yeah, I think in my school experience, I'm thinking back to my elementary school years now, it felt like there was a really big emphasis on repetition and fluency. Like, it was, how fast can you memorize these multiplication tables?
Over and over until it starts, yeah.
How'd you do on the spelling test? You know, yeah, remember the poetry, you know, piece. There was this real emphasis on memorization, you know, of skills. And now I think that we're trying to, you know, still build that foundation of skills in the early grades, but then giving kids some opportunity to be creative in how they address, you know, the objective or the standard of an assignment in their upper elementary through secondary school years.
So how do you balance native intelligence or intellect, or I know those are genetic terms, but knowledge versus using tools that are available to augment that? I think the classic one, at least it was when we were going through, you couldn't use calculators.
Yeah.
Either a physics test or not. I was never in the chemistry room, ever.
Yeah.
Or in the mathematics classes. Can't use that. Well, the question was, well, why wouldn't we want to use the tools that we have at our disposal to get the answer done properly?
Absolutely.
Well, you need to learn the fundamentals. Okay. But that balance.
Right.
You know, because technology is there. I mean, whether it's AI or, you know, whatever you may want, XYZ, it doesn't matter, versus do it by hand. Well, I haven't seen too many abacus in elementary schools, so we're not going all the way back. We're using other things also. Sure. They're just defined differently. How do you balance that use of tools that are available during that learning, grasping, understanding formative part of education?
Yeah. For me, you know, change is a constant, and, you know, we have to adapt and make sure that our students are ready for the future of work. And if we're asking ourselves, you know, what are the skills that, you know, this profession needs, and what are the tools that this profession, you know, is currently using, you can kind of backward map from there. If our big aim is to make sure that our students are ready and prepared for the future of work, we can take some actionable steps. And I think that that's a mindset that we have to constantly be, you know, thinking through.
So how do you infuse that into the teachers?
One conversation at a time, you know, asking great questions, asking students, you know, and our staff, you know, what's next? You know, how's it working? You know, how do we get community members into our classrooms? How do we get community members?
Isn't that the biggest fear of a lot of teachers? I mean, if it's public speaking and drowning for regular people, my understanding is that having a parent or a community member pop into their classroom is the biggest fear of teachers.
Change is hard in the teaching profession, and it hasn't morphed a whole heck of a lot in the last century, right? But I think that we don't want to surprise teachers. We just don't want to pop in. You know, it's not a pop quiz, but we want to provide opportunities.
Not unannounced necessarily, but don't prepare anything special. But if you know somebody's parent is coming in, you start to hedge because you know that they're coming in. I mean, life doesn't have that. If somebody runs a stoplight in front of you, you don't get notification 5 minutes before that somebody's going to run a stoplight in front of you. So when you're driving to work this morning, you pay a little bit more attention.
For sure. We try to listen to our students, and our students are asking for real world applicable skills that reinforce what it is that they learn in the traditional classroom. And I think when you're able to capture student voice, all educators I haven't met a rotten educator. They all want to do what's best for students. And when you collectively have a group of students that are telling you that they want, you know, to learn in a particular way, and that we can back that up by demonstrating that this is going to best prepare students for the future of work, it's a pretty powerful narrative that most folks can get behind.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Gary Storitz from Eureka City Schools. We've touched a little bit about communication skills.
Mm-hmm.
And typically when people think about communication, it's either spoken or written. Okay, and I think everybody's pretty familiar with the fact that handwriting is up for debate these days, whether it's printing or cursive or neither.
Well,
okay.
Cursive is coming back next year.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I mean, if nothing else, it's fine motor skills and then developing it with that. Listening skills are often overlooked.
Agreed.
Is that part of your three-legged milk stool for communication?
It is. It 100% is. We need to get kids, you know, to use your favorite word, collaborating with one another a little bit more. But we need to get kids listening to one another, sharing ideas, expanding upon, you know, others' ideas, and genuine partnerships. You know, a partnership is not just getting an assignment done, running down a checklist. You know, we want students to be able to bounce ideas off one another, to take somebody else's idea and see it from a different perspective, to go back to some of those, you know, more classic debate skills, you know, that were, you know, lost in yesteryear.
Yeah. Well, and nobody dies.
Correct.
You know, so we may not, I don't know what the kid analogy is to argue your socks off and then have a beer afterwards. We'd probably have a soda.
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe a hamburger.
I think perspective taking is something that students need to be able
to practice. It's your opinion, it's not you.
Absolutely.
So when you hear words, and I think be willing to ask, gee, I don't know what that word means. Tell me more.
Right.
How come?
Right.
Instead of, you know, immediately leaping to a conclusion.
Whether you're writing a persuasive essay or you're delivering a persuasive speech, you know, it's a pretty good opportunity to take the counterpoint, you know, and to truly be able to understand an issue, you need to be able to advocate for whatever it is that the position that you're taking, but then also be able to flip it around and say, all right, great.
Yeah.
Let's look at this from the other side.
Well, and I think we do that instinctively.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where do you want to go for lunch? I don't know. How about dinner? How come? Why? Blah, blah, blah. Okay. Nobody died. There was no fight.
Right.
We don't have lingering animosities.
Right.
It's done and you move on. And I think if that was a takeaway, how cool would that be?
If we can get kids to do this, they might be teaching the class for how to do this for adults.
Or teaching mom and dad.
Absolutely. You know, schools have that place and that ability to, you know, kind of be the tide that rises all boats. And if we can get students to, you know, look at an argument from a particular position, and then to be able to flip it and be able to articulate it, and then be able to say, you know what, I still disagree, but that's okay. I disagree with the position and not the person. That is win-win.
Yeah, it's the opinion. It's not the messenger, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Was it Henry VIII? Shoot the messenger?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the temptation most people have, right?
Absolutely.
Bad news, okay, you unload on who brought the bad news. Man, is that why court jesters? I'm thinking somewhere in the back of my head, I'm thinking that's where jesters came from, as they were always seen as somebody who was a little light-witted, but would always point out the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah.
And that was part of their mission. You know, their function was to point out the other side, because so often the messenger did get shot.
Absolutely.
And taken out. You know, so who wants to be that guy or gal? Yeah. So how do you know that communication skills are improving? It's obviously, it's very, very, very subjective.
Absolutely.
So how do you know that it's going in the right direction, that that's something that you're accomplishing.
These are things that we are, you know, actively talking about and designing. So we're kind of in the conceptual stage right now at Eureka City Schools, but we want to clearly define what success looks like. So we've got these list of, you know, competencies and traits that we want students to be able to talk about. But what are the look fors when Brian, if you were going to walk around a class with me, you know, and we walked into a couple of classrooms, you know, what would we hope to see if we were looking for, you know, students practicing communication skills? What would it look like? What would it sound like? And we want to kind of co-design that success criteria with our teachers so that there's a little bit of ownership and a little bit of buy-in. And then when we're coming around, we can say, look, we saw this, this, and this. You know, that was great.
You can almost taste it. Almost
absolutely.
Feel it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would think dialogue would be huge. You know, are the kids sleeping or are they engaged? I mean, that's sales 101. You know, if the guy or gal you're talking to is frog-eyed or they're looking over your shoulder at the clock or down at their wrist, you lost them.
Right.
Same thing in the classroom. I mean, those same parallel analogies.
For sure. So assessing, you know, communication for our example, we want the look fors that we kind of co-design with teachers, but we want students to also be able to kind of self-reflect on, you know, how are they communicating with their teacher? How are they communicating with their with their peer, you know, with their partner, and then have that criteria explicit and known and celebrated when it happens.
Yeah, I would think attaboys, when they're seen, are way cool, you know, for this pop in. Pluses and minuses, opportunities and challenges, whatever you want to call it. But I guess that keeps you coming back to work each day, huh?
The rose and glows, they call it.
Who calls it?
Well, that's somebody.
Okay, fine. Yeah. Thanks for coming by. See everybody tomorrow.